Have you ever pondered the most profound betrayals? You know, the ones that unfold right under your nose without a single alarm bell ringing, or considered a sin so subtle it leaves like no visible trace, breaks no overt law, and somehow, incredibly, gets celebrated as a divine miracle.
It's a chilling thought, isn't it?
It really is. So today we're doing a deep dive into somnoscopia, which is, well, it's a truly unique conceptual short story, almost like a microvisual novel premise, and it's absolutely packed with these layers of subtle, morally complex questions.
Definitely, it hooks you right away.
So our mission today is to extract the most fascinating nuggets from this singular source material. We're focusing on a tale of undetectable sin and how an almost chilling form of quiet compliance can become, well, the most dangerous weapon imaginable. It's a story that truly makes you rethink what violation even means.
It's compelling from the very first line, really,
Yeah.
because Somnoscopia introduces us to Lute, a village
Kind of.
apothecary, and his entire existence, as the source describes it, has been defined by compliance, never making requests, only fulfilling them.
Never making requests, that's key.
Exactly. And this seemingly passive trait, this deep-seated lack of personal assertion, becomes the very foundation for a profound and deeply unsettling betrayal.
It's like his silence becomes active somehow.
Precisely. It's a masterclass in how silence can be actively weaponized.
So let's really unpack Lute himself, this quiet architect of the whole insidious plan. You know the description in the source material.
Yeah, soft-featured short.
Utterly unremarkable, with eyes perpetually hidden under his hair. He's widely liked, yes, but also crucially deeply ignored.
And that detail's so important.
It really is. For me, this is the real nugget. Lute believes no one will ever give him love, so he will accept it unconsciously offered.
Oh.
That's such a chilling this sort of subtle demand, but it's disguised as compliance.
Absolutely. It's the very core of his character.
Yeah.
And this is where that concept of requestlessness as invisibility really comes to life. Lute's conviction that he's immune to sin if he never voices a desire or a request. Well, it isn't just a quirk.
No.
It's his most insidious weapon. His perceived harmlessness, that quiet nature you mentioned, it isn't a weakness at all.
It's camouflage.
It's the ultimate camouflage for his profound betrayal. He operates completely under the radar, precisely because no one expects a threat from someone so, well, unremarkable.
So what sparks this silent, chilling revenge from someone so, ostensibly compliant?
Was the return of his childhood friend, Euphonia. She comes
Okay.
back from some heroic journey, the story says, and then she marries their shared idol, the noble warrior Tactus.
Tactus, everyone's hero, basically.
Exactly. He's described as massive, honest, old-fashioned, everyone's older brother.
Right. And he likes loot.
Yeah, he genuinely admires Lute and constantly thanks him for his work as an apothecary. From the outside, everything looks perfectly idyllic.
But that's the setup.
And that right there is Tactus's fatal blind spot. The source makes it really clear. He never considers being betrayed because he cannot imagine Lute being able to.
He just can't conceive of it. Lute's too harmless.
Utterly harmless in his eyes. This unwitting trust, this complete lack of suspicion, it creates the perfect environment for Lute's sublimated revenge.
Sublimated revenge. That's a great phrase for it.
And it's not born from typical motives like lust or rage, the source says. It's something far colder.
Colder? How so?
A desire to mark the world in a way no one can deny, even if they never truly understand its origin. It's about leaving a permanent, invisible scar.
Wow. Okay, here's where it truly gets, well, captivating for me. Lute's revenge is unique because he never physically touches Euphonia.
Right, no direct contact.
Never overtly corrupts her, never breaks a traditional law. Instead, he orchestrates his plan using a dream loop compound.
Which is just fascinating in itself.
It really is a unique substance he somehow distilled from Euphonia's own past affections.
It's almost like he's weaponizing her own emotional history, her memories.
Exactly, allowing him to bypass physical contact entirely. It's insidious.
And one striking aspect of this world is its magic texture, as the source calls it.
Okay, yeah, tell us about that.
It's not the flashy, fireball kind of magic you might expect.
Right.
It's largely devotional and ritual bound, built around things like these dream compounds, blessing incense, divine pregnancy rites, that sort of thing.
So very internal, subtle.
Exactly. Magic here is internal, cumulative, and considered sacred when it works at all. This context is absolutely crucial to understanding how Lute operates.
Because he exploits that subtlety.
Precisely. He exploits the subtle internal workings of belief rather than using, you know, overt spells or force.
So how does this undetectable sin actually take root? This brings us to a really chilling concept the story explores. Consent via dream proxy.
Consent via dream proxy.
Euphonia. She's deeply spiritual, right? So she prays fervently for conception. And in her dream, she's led to believe it's the divine will bringing this child about. But it's Lute, of course.
Pulling the strings.
He ensures the face she sees in that dream is eerily familiar, though she interprets it within a divine context.
Which compels us to ask these powerful questions about their religious framework.
Okay.
Because blessings in this world, they're said to require a pure alignment of prayer and will.
Right, a meeting of hearts and divine purpose.
Yeah, and miracles are believed to happen only when two hearts align with that divine purpose. This deep-seated belief is what Lute deliberately tests and exploits.
He forges divinity.
Exactly. He makes the outcome appear as a true miracle. And if we consider the broader implications here, it really forces us to confront, what is the true nature of belief when it can be so expertly, so subtly manipulated?
It really undermines the whole foundation. And through all this, Euphonia remains completely oblivious, which is just heartbreaking.
Completely unaware.
She's described as radiant, kind, deeply spiritual, genuinely in love with her husband, Tactus. She does suffer from, like, dream anxieties and guilt during the conception period, fearing she's infertile.
Which Lute probably knows and maybe even uses.
Oh, that's dark. And her husband, Tactus, he consoles her, tells her it's okay. She believes him entirely. She never suspects a thing.
And this is precisely where the story's moral subtlety truly shines. It's what makes it so unnerving.
How so?
There's no overt rape, no mind-breaking, no clear villainous act that anyone could point to and say, that's the crime.
Right. Legally, maybe nothing's wrong.
It's simply the profound theft of a legacy, achieved through incredibly clever legal and crucially religious loopholes.
Elegant evil.
Elegant evil, as the source puts it, yeah. Lute never gloats, never asserts himself. He wins by refusing to assert, only to insinuate.
Embedding his mark in the world without a single person ever realizing how it actually got there.
Exactly.
And so the inevitable consequence unfolds. A child is born, seemingly under this divine blessing. The world naturally hails it as the true, pure heir to Tactus's noble line. The deception is complete. And totally unseen.
Which leads us directly to that legacy fraud thematic pillar.
Right.
The world celebrates a divine heir, and in a really twisted sense, it is divine, or at least divinely sanctioned by the process.
But the origin.
But divinity, as it turns out, can be forged. It's a chilling redefinition of what we perceive as sacred and inherited, isn't it?
Absolutely. As for the child, how is the child described?
Well, the source says they're blessed, a bit of an egghead, so suggesting maybe more intellect than brawn.
Okay, not a Tactus clone then.
Not quite like their heroic father, no. But no one minds. The villagers just attribute this to, you know, a blessing of mixed lineage or perhaps a skip generation trait.
Natural explanations for something unnatural.
Exactly. Only Lute, of course, watches closely. He knows.
He knows the truth.
It's also particularly compelling how this premise functions as an anti-JRPG and maybe an anti-Atelier story.
Oh, interesting. How so?
Well, in those genres, heroism often comes from noble bloodlines or fated destinies, right? Chosen ones?
Yeah, the hero bloodline is a classic trope.
Here, the child does become a hero, apparently, but it's not by inherent destiny. It's by this ritual tampering, this forged divine blessing.
So the heroism itself is built on a lie.
Which isn't just a clever twist. It forces us, and you listening, to ask, does a legacy built on deception inherently invalidate the heroism achieved?
Mm.
Or can heroism, in some strange way, actually vindicate its manipulated origin? Does the outcome justify the means, even if the means were it? This.
That's a heavy question.
It also powerfully challenges our assumptions about who truly holds power. Are the quiet healers, the apothecaries of the world, really so harmless after all?
Yeah, make you look twice.
At the quiet ones. The story itself, it's structured as a one-act tragedy.
Yeah, right? Very concise.
And it ends right there.
Mm.
With the child's birth and the hero's blessing being bestowed upon them.
That's the climax.
And Lute, he watches from the temple steps.
Yeah.
And he smiles. That's the final image. Chilling. Just smiles. Yeah. Yeah. The mood keywords the source gives for this story truly encapsulates its essence. It's patient, violated, prayerful, smug, elegiac, and ultimately about undetectable sin.
Undetectable sin sums it up.
And the tagline is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
She never asked, he never told, but the goddess heard someone's prayer.
But the goddess heard someone's prayer. It's that final twist of the knife, isn't it? Like the universe itself becomes an unwitting accomplice.
Or at least the interpretation of the divine will does.
Right. So what does this deep dive into somnoscopia truly mean for you, listening right now, as we navigate our own worlds?
Yeah, what's the takeaway?
I think it's a powerful reflection on the unsettling power of manipulation that operates entirely within, you know, perceived legal and religious boundaries.
Absolutely. The kind that doesn't set off alarms.
It's a stark reminder that true malice can be almost imperceptible, a quiet insinuation rather than a lied declaration.
And it compels us to consider, how do we even define consent and violation when the victim is entirely unaware? And when no overt rules or laws are broken, at least not in a way anyone can see, what does it truly mean to have a divine blessing if its origin is just a cold, calculated act of deception?
Performed by someone who literally believes himself invisible to sin because he never asked.
Yeah, it's profoundly disturbing.
It's a lot to ponder, isn't it?
Yeah.
Perhaps the most dangerous deceptions are indeed those we can't even see. This story truly makes you look at the quiet corners of your world with a fresh, perhaps unnerving perspective.